Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
Hey guys, welcome back to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. We're here, episode 345.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's probably 14 or 15. I don't honestly know.
I feel a lot of pressure all of a sudden.
This is the one that people have been waiting for. We got John Walker Jones here. Great three-name name, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you. That was Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah.
Was the guy.
I'm like, that's an inspiration.
That kind of thing. Well, I moved here to be a bartender, wannabe actor, and I wanted a three-name name because I have no relationship with my father, but like, and that's a story we don't need to get
we'll get into
it.
We'll get to the bottom of that.
But I was looking at tombstones, and I found like these
As
names like
do.
John W. Smoke, like these Western tombstones, like old timey. And then one guy's name was John Walker Jones, and I'm like, that's pretty fucking cool. Maybe I'll be John Walker Jones.
That's rad.
Yeah.
So you chose the whole name.
Yeah. And it was the last year that I lived in Oakland, and before I moved here, I was in East Oakland, and there's a bar like right around the corner from me called the 3411 Lounge, and very like hole in the wall, very just kind of neighborhood oriented place. And I went in there and I met the bartender Everett, and I was like talking about moving here, and I'm like, I think I'm going to call myself John Walker Jones, and he's like, God damn, that's a badass name, John Walker Jones. And I'm like, well, yeah, when a black guy says it sounds even cooler. He's like, well, everything does. And I'm like, well,
also
course.
True, Everett. So, that's what I'm thinking. In my mind, I'm picturing Everett, and I'm just like, what does that guy look like to me? And then you say black guy, and I'm like, that changes everything.
Yeah, just a handsome
I'm picturing white Everett, and I'm just like, this dude is definitely creepy.
Yeah,
but black Everett, that dude sounds pretty dope.
Yeah, and he took it and ran with it, and I would come in after work sometimes, just hang out with him, have a beer and decompress, and I would walk in the door and he would just announce John Walker Jones, and like people would turn and he'd be like, have you met John Walker Jones yet? He's a comedian, he's a musician, he's an actor. And he just totally like built this up in this bar. And I would on Wednesday nights they had karaoke, and this woman Shanette would make this giant thing of gumbo, and there's a guy named was Darnell the Mad Hatter. He was like the DJ guy for the karaoke, and I would just put JWJ, and then he would get up on the mic and he's like, oh shit, coming up next, JWJ, Mr. John Walker Jones. And then I'd come up, and it was really cool because it really
got
him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would see people in the neighborhood and they would yell at the car at me, John Walker Jones. So it was like, well, I guess apparently that it's gonna stick now.
Yeah. No, so when I saw the name, I'm like, that's sweet. And I thought, If your name is John Walker Jones, you got to go three names, because that Walker in the middle really solidifies it. Like, that sounds cool.
Yeah, there was like a character I think in a Marvel named Walker Jones.
Okay,
it's because I just kind of Googled a little bit to see if there was anyone, but no one else had the full thing. So I'm like, well, I'm just gonna do that.
Yeah,
now.
It sounds like a cool like a blues musician from like the 50s.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily sound like a white dude.
Yeah,
but I mean, I thought it'd be fun to just have something that was kind of westerny 70s kind of phony, because it doesn't really matter.
No,
you know, it's like,
I love that you were looking at tombstones thinking about a name change. Like, there's got to be someone out there who's dead.
Yeah,
figured out like, how to be
it.
Cool.
There was one was John W. Smoke.
That's a pretty
which
sweet
I'm
name.
Like, that's a pretty good one too. But I think that's also a Butthole Surfer song.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, I don't know if I want that. I mean, I'm not. I mean, not that I'm.
You don't
want to
be
band,
associated with the Butthole
with
Surfers.
Butthole Surfing.
I see here that you you went on a Vegas vacation.
Oh, yeah.
That ended the marriage.
Well, amongst other things, but that really solidified things. Yes, I went to Vegas with my best friend, my wife and his wife at that time. And this is kind of, I don't know, 15 years ago or something.
Okay.
And we'd never been to Vegas before. So when we got there and realized, oh shit, you can just walk around drinking and smoking and they don't care. Like, this is amazing.
Yeah,
like,
it's a level of freedom where you're like, especially, like you said, you were from Nebraska earlier. You can't do that kind of thing in real America.
Like, no, you do that in the basement. Or, yeah.
If you walked around somewhere that's wood paneled, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
That's what I was used to growing up in Kansas, was a lot of like hanging out in someone's basement, the wood, fake wood paneling on the walls, and like, this is where you get drunk.
Yeah. Or just like shitty punker houses in the basement, yep, and with kegs. And yeah. So once it was like, wow, you can just walk around. So we, you know, we went to the store and bought 12 packs, like assholes. We're just like walking around with the 12 packs, just drinking them and smoking. And, you know, did stuff that they wanted to, and then our wives would go to sleep, and we would go out, and we would drink and gamble till like, 7 in the morning, come back to the hotel room, lay down, and not sleep, but just, like just be unconscious, you know, for, like, 2 hours. So they wake up, and like, okay, Louis, we want to go do this, and like, oh, fuck, all right, we'll go do your thing, and then they'd go back home, and we'd go out, and we did this 3 nights in a row.
Yeah.
So, like, no sleep, and just this ridiculous, you know, kill a mule amount of beer. And then we're eating like shitty MSG fueled buffets every day, and you know, like, yeah, we're not taking care of ourselves.
Yeah, and, very rarely do people go to Vegas. And
Vegas
go,
is not known for that. It's really
had
it's
a like healthy weekend.
A terrible person.
Yeah,
a lot of smoothies.
Yeah,
and
just really took care of myself.
So the last day, we're gonna go. They want to go to Red Rocks Canyon. So we get up. Again, another shitty buffet, and start driving out there. And halfway there, we made a tragic mistake, and we stopped, and we bought these 2 big things of coffee. And as we're getting closer, like, my stomach is already, like, not fucking
not
stoked.
Yeah.
And I can feel it, and I'm like, smack-talking, like, the canyon. Like, that canyon better be deep, because I'm going to fill that motherfucker up, you know? And just so we get there, and there's, like, a tourist center, and it's closed. And it's like, oh, no. Like, well, I can probably deal for a little bit. So we drive further, and we come to, like, a vista point or whatever, a viewpoint. And we all get out of the car. And at this point, I realize both our wives have, like, platform shoes. They're all dressed up like we're going out. But, like, yeah, we're going to a canyon. Why are you wearing platform shoes?
Right.
You
like, know? We just brought Vegas clothes. So this is the option.
That's all they wore the whole time. So we're at the top, and we're looking down, and they're like, well, why don't you go down and, like, get a picture or take a picture of us or whatever? And we're like, okay, fine. Because we're just wearing shorts and T-shirts because it's, like,
right,
it's hot.
We're in
and,
Vegas.
You know.
And, yeah.
So we're going down the hill, and like halfway down, it just hits me where it's like, oh, I have to poop like now. Like, it was like a fist, like working my
breaking its way out
beehole like a speed bag,
like a butthole surfer's concert, like if you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay. Well, there would have been a lot of surfing. There was quite a wave that crashed, but it was like my core and locked up my and everything just to tense to not, you know. And I tell my friend, like, dude, don't make me laugh. Like, I need, and there was bushes ahead of us. So I'm like, if I can just get down there. But he starts laughing at me.
As a friend would.
Yeah, as my friend. Yeah. And I laugh, and I just barely ha, and it all.
Explosion.
Like, just filled my underwear to capacity. And then out. Like, it's running down my legs.
Desert oasis. Yeah.
it's a nightmare. And I run.
Full George Brett.
And I get behind the bushes. And I take my shorts off and my underwear off, and I'm like spider walking, you know, back on my hands, and it's just there's no moderation.
It's a disaster.
It just keeps coming out, just this irresponsible amount of diarrhea. And my friend,
an irresponsible amount of diarrhea
like,
is
you should
the
not
best
be
way
living,
I've ever heard it described.
It truly was. And my friend's like, you know, by the bushes, like a few feet away from me, and he's peeing. And he's watching, and he's laughing so hard that he's not even making a sound. And his face is just red, and tears are streaming down his eyes. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, in this nightmare. And then all of a sudden, he gets this horror shock look in his face. And then he runs, and he kind of jumps over me. And then I see poop falling out of his shorts. So he is now shitting in his pants as well. So he gets,
dude, this is best friend shit.
This is like friends for life.
Yeah.
So he's next
making
to me.
Making connections, as Brody would say.
And same drill, takes his pants and underwear off, and we're both doing the spider walk across these rocks. And just like this bottomless smoothie machines. And I can't believe how much, and it smells like a someone gutted a pig. It's just this horrible nightmare. I can't believe this is actually happening. And there's people like kind of walking around nearby. You can hear like voices like, oh my God, if some family comes and sees this, we're going to like ruin like their whole life.
I
like,
hope no children just, are here today.
It's like, so we finally get done and we stand up and like just totally like Porky Pig in it, you know, just the hat, just a shirt, nothing else, on our legs, on our feet. And we're like, fuck, so we grab our underwear and to what was left to kind of like trying to wipe whatever we could get off. And then we walk around the bushes and we look up and there's our wives looking down, like waving, you know, waiting for us to come up. And I'm like, oh man, I'm like, let's just go up there, get in the car, and just don't say anything, you know.
The pants are on or off?
Pants are back on, but underwear is behind.
Yeah.
They're for the coyotes now.
Yeah,
It's like the coyote buffet was going to happen post.
They closed Red Rocks Canyon after this permanently. There's toxic situation.
A bunch of coyotes they found dead from like too much MSG. So we walk up and we just go into the back seat of the car and they're like, what's going on? And they come over and we're like, we got to go back to the hotel. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, we shit our pants.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck you.
We Vegas for 3 days, and then we drank a bunch of coffee.
We both literally shit our pants. And one of them sticks their head in the window, like, oh, my God, you did.
Yeah.
So then we have to drive back to the hotel. And if you've been to Vegas, like, the hotels are so big that they look like it's, like, two blocks away, but it's, like, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And they're so mad at us. And we're just, it's just this quiet 45-minute drive. I mean, at one point I said, like, this will stay in Vegas, right? Yeah, right, everybody.
Yeah,
am I right, ladies? You know, like, they're not laughing. It's not funny to them.
They're not enjoying themselves.
they're just like, they're already mad at us because we've been up drinking like assholes all night the whole time.
Right.
So we get to the hotel and they just drop us off and they leave. And we're like,
that's a good sign.
Yeah. So we have to like go to the MGM and make a beeline to the elevator and hope that neither no one's near us or no one gets in the elevator with us or no one's on the elevator with us, you know.
Someone shit their pants in the desert? I recognize that smell anywhere.
Oh, that's a desert shit.
Yeah. Did you shit in them wild donkeys while you're out there shitting yourself?
So we get in the elevator, no one's on there, get up, clean ourselves off, and then you know, later they finally come back and my wife comes in and she's just so mad at me. And I'm like, what? Like, I don't get it. Do you think we didn't plan on doing this, you know? But
it does say on the agenda, shit your pants at 3:30.
You never shit your pants, so you shit your pants in a canyon.
That's exactly right.
It's a very freeing.
That's the place to do
liberating,
it.
Liberating, close to nature.
Sorry,
situation.
I like to organically have irresponsible amounts of diarrhea. That's the triple buffet diarrhea.
Irresponsible amounts of diarrhea. That sounds like a punk band, maybe.
Yeah.
She was mad and we just had this kind of, you know, bad conversation and whatever. And it was like, it was kind of at the end of it anyways. And then 6 months later, it was
done.
It was totally done. So happy ending.
Yeah.
So
in the end you were free, but yeah.
So yeah. And now I've told, probably several people this story as well.
Yeah. Listen, this is only going to get you love. As far as I can.
There's. I know a lot of people would be caught. Who's that guy who shit himself in a canyon?
Yeah, what?
What a charmer.
They're not going to say who's that guy. They're going to go John. They're going to go John Walker Jones.
John Walker Jones. Pants
shitter.
That's a
bad motherfucker. Yeah. the coyote killer? That guy knows how to party.
Yeah, with his MSG diarrhea. So.
And you said you grew up in Nebraska. What part of Nebraska did you?
I grew up in Lincoln.
Okay.
So
that's where the university is.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not completely hillbilly ethos, but the problem is like small towns. Are you in Kansas City or where were
you?
Yeah,
from the suburbs of Kansas City.
Okay. So everyone that's from the outskirts of town goes to school and they just kind of further the kind of hillbilly ethos.
Right.
You know.
There's really... I can't even tell you another college in Nebraska.
Well, yeah, they,
I know that there's a couple like Christian schools.
There might be one in Omaha or something.
Yeah,
but it's the same with your
Mutual of Omaha.
Yeah. Well, I was talking earlier about the seeing you do this stuff about Kansas and just everyone's in absurd civic pride. Well, like in Nebraska's the same way, where there's like literally 9 of 10 people have a Nebraska shirt or hoodie or it's really kind of. Twilight, especially if you're not from there. Like, I brought my girlfriend there, and it was kind of messed her up a little bit. It's like, what is up with it? It's like people roaming around Nebraska with Nebraska shirts on.
Well, and it's weird, too. You know? Like, I never really rocked any sort of, like, I never wore, like, Royals t-shirts or Chiefs t-shirts when I was in Kansas City.
Yeah.
But I have some now. I wear them in L.A., but it doesn't seem as weird. Like, I always think it's weird when I fly back to Kansas City. There's always a plane full of people in Kansas City gear.
Well, yeah, you feel it's like when you're there, it felt weird because I was not into being there.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, that's how I was too.
I was like, probably like 9 or 10, and like, oh man, I just need to grow up and like
so I
get
out
of here.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I felt the same way. I'm just like, once I'm an adult, I'm not gonna.
Yeah, because yeah, and I moved away and I never even thought about going back, because it was just,
yeah,
it was not a.
Where did you move to first?
I first moved to Minneapolis because I had friends that had moved up there, and it was kind of the closest place. And someone was moving to Amsterdam, so they had a room open, so I'm like, okay, cool. Because I think I was like 21 when I moved there.
Yeah,
but
what'd you do in Minneapolis? Just bartend?
In Minneapolis, I was in bands for a long time, so. I was.
What'd you play?
I played guitar and sang in a few bands, okay. And then I played drums in a band. I had a T-shirt shop for a while called Stroker Ace with the Burt Reynolds Museum on the inside of it and a Burt Reynolds sign.
Fuck
and,
yeah!
Yeah, very into.
Where
that.
Does your appreciation of Burt Reynolds come from?
Well, a friend of mine, who's a little bit older, but we both love the old 70s movies like Every Which Way But Loose, or, you know, these Burt, and we would get drunk and watch these movies together, and they're hilarious. And we wanted to start a t-shirt shop ourselves because we had learned how to do it, and we're like, oh, well, when you pull the squeegee across as a stroke, we'll call it Stroke or Ace. And we had like a Burt Reynolds sign with him in a cowboy hat and like these two like cross squeegees.
Right.
And a Burt Reynolds museum in the front of it. And we like the first year we used the company credit card to fly down to Jupiter to see the Burt Reynolds and Friends Museum.
That's a real thing?
It was a real thing. It recently in Vegas, which was my second return to Vegas, he auctioned off all of his stuff because he owned Lonnie Anderson like back alimony,
right.
And all that stuff that I'd already seen like years and years ago was auctioned off and sold. I went back to see it again.
Get some more Burt.
Some more Burt. And I got a picture. I went to the event and I was, Lonnie Anderson was there and she looks like exactly the same. Like the hair, it was like Jennifer from WKR. I was like, oh my God, it's her. And she's like two booths over. And I had this weird outfit. I was wearing like jeans and like a dark gray shirt with a tie and like a camouflage Waylon Jennings hat.
Okay, sure.
Trucker hat.
As people do.
But I had like a bag over my shoulder and I passed my phone to my girlfriend. I'm like, follow me. I'm going to get a picture. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm going to get one. So I go over there and I was like, oh, I'm so sorry, Mrs. Anderson, to interrupt you. But I'm a writer. And I'm working on an article for the Burt Reynolds auction. Is there any way I could get a picture? She's like, oh yeah, of course. Like that, you know, we need as many people as we could. So I just like have my arm around her or whatever. And she's a teeny little lady.
Yeah.
And she
did crush it on WKRP in Cincinnati. Just destroyed it.
So that was my second return to Vegas.
I mean, it sounds like a better trip.
Well, there's one thing. Oh man, this is so stupid. So we're there.
We're looking for so stupid. So if you have
you got the right guy. I'm your idiot.
We encourage that kind of tomfoolery. In
this
these
is
parts.
So dumb. But I was at post auction. I went to the restroom and I was a little drunk at the time.
Did you buy any Burt?
I didn't. Good? No, it was really expensive.
Super expensive. Yeah.
And I'm just like I took a paddle and I bought a book that had everything that was in there or whatever and got my picture with Lonnie Anderson, which was, you know, Instagram. And yeah. So I go in the restroom and there's this kid who's probably 12 and he's going to the bathroom at the urinal, but his pants are on his feet. Like, you know, like
when you're like five,
when
maybe.
You're five. Yeah. But this kid is like 11. And I'm like, what are your parents? What is your dad doing?
You,
and I'm just thinking this is so funny. And I take a picture like an asshole,
yeah.
Like not even thinking, And I go out and I find my girlfriend. I'm like, look at this kid. What is wrong with him? And she's like, what is wrong with you? What are you doing? Like, I just didn't even think, what if someone walked into the bathroom and you're taking, like, yeah. Just like, oh my God, it was so, so dumb. And then
I remember, yeah, I was gonna say, we got a trafficker on our hands this week. No, I remember when I was probably in high school or something, and I went to a UMKC basketball game, and it was T-shirt night or whatever it was. And so everyone got a free T-shirt, but they were all the same size. So if you were a five-year-old kid, they still gave you the adult large.
Yeah, like XXL or something.
Was, And I just remember putting it on and being like, this is way too big for me. I was probably 14 or 15. And at one point, I walked into the bathroom, and there was a kid standing there. And he had his pants all the way down around his ankles, and he had his shirt tucked up under his chin, and then he was standing there peeing, and then I was peeing next to him, and, you know, doing the stare straight ahead, act like there's nothing going on, and then the kid just goes, oh, no, and I looked over, and there's just urine spreading. His shirt had dropped down, and poor kid underneath just, so it just dropped, and he was just pissing all over the inside of the shirt.
Oh, poor guy.
The thing was just soaking wet. I'm like, oh, sure, we'll give you another shirt. Like, that's what was bothering him.
Yeah.
I walked out, and he was like, so poor idiot. This is their pig all over himself.
Scar you for life.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully he's watching, and he's like, that son of a bitch.
Well, this came back to haunt me like 2 years later. When iPhone was doing that whole like a picture montage, like 2 years ago, you were in Vegas, right?
Right.
And it has like the music and stuff. And I'd completely forgotten about this at this point. And I'm at, we're post work, and it's like me and like three or four other coworkers. And I'm like, oh my God, this is my trip to Vegas. Look at this. There's pictures of me with Lonnie Anderson coming up. And, you know, it's playing this bad music and photos are coming in and out, and then all of a sudden there's the 10-year-old boy, the 11-year-old boy's ass. It's like, I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot that. And I was in there, and they're like, what is this? Why do you have this in your phone? I'm like,
it's not what you think, okay? Yeah, he was a strange kid. I don't even know what his name is. Like, This is not classic John Walker Jones type stuff. He only shows us naked pics of the ladies.
Oh God, yeah, that was. I mean, I can't believe I hadn't deleted it. But so that was really embarrassing.
So then at some point you said you lived in Oakland. Was that your first California stop?
Yeah, yeah. I was in Portland for a couple of miserable years. And then
I had a friend who lived in San Francisco for a long time, and his brother lived in Portland, so he went up to visit him. And he was like, man, this place is great. And so he moved to Portland, and then after like 2.5 weeks, he was like, I'm moving back. This place sucks. I'm like, that's all it took?
Like,
there's a week's worth of things to do here.
Yeah, and it's a great place to visit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I moved there sight unseen because my girlfriend at the time had an opportunity that they would pay for us, and I was kind of, I wanted to get out of Minneapolis because I'd been there too long, and I think within like 2 months, I realized I'd made a terrible mistake, and I was telling my friends that I felt like I'd moved into Whole Foods.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's basically what you picture. It's homeless people and like pretentious.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I accept everyone, but also no one is as good as me.
Well, this kind of like this kind of smug,
kind
of liberalism, and then you know there's the show was on Portlandia, but I couldn't watch it because it just made me angry.
Like, I love that.
Like this is just too close.
This
to home.
Is too on. Yeah. Yeah, this is too on the nose. I can't deal with this.
So yeah. A couple years later, a friend of mine and his girlfriend split up, and he's like, hey, if you want to come live here, like a room's open, and I managed to get a job from a couple friends like on Facebook. Like I knew that I lived in Oakland. Like, hey, do you live in Oakland? Or you're in Oakland? Do you know anywhere? Look, and we both work at this place, and they need a bartender, and so they called me up on the telephone, and they're like, well, your friends like you. When can you be here? And I'm like, this weekend? So, like, my girlfriend came home, I'm like, oh, so by the way, I'm moving to Oakland this weekend. And
she was still your girlfriend?
She still was. Well, she ended up moving with me, and we were there for, a long time. And we did split up, but she's, like, one of my best friends.
Okay.
And it's great.
You don't destroy your relationships
this
with
is
people?
This is the one that I didn't. This is the one.
I like that. This is the one.
Yeah.
this is the one that I did not destroy everything.
Yeah, I'm a little more evolved than I was when I was shitting my pants in the desert.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, that's the highest level of evolution.
when you
and a buddy can just really bond in that moment, that lets...
It's kind of like Vietnam vets now, almost with that. Like, we should have held hands at one point. We were both on the ground together, you know.
We're going to survive.
We're in the trenches, brother.
Yeah. All right. So then when did you move to L.A.? What brought you to L.A.?
I moved to L.A. February 15th, 2020.
Oh, wow.
Like,
okay.
Really bad timing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said things are hot in L.A. right now.
Well, I had been doing some stand-up, and then I got tired of doing stand-up, and then I started doing acting classes, and then I focused my attention on that. And then at the end of the year, I was, like, ready. I'm just going to go to L.A. And I knew it was going to be daunting because I didn't really know anyone here, and no one was going with me. And I came in January, and I stayed with a friend that I sort of knew 10 years ago, but I saw that he had moved here with his girlfriend. I'm like, can I please stay with you and find a place?
It's a very essential part of being able to move to L.A.
Yeah. And I was with them for 3 weeks as their relationship is imploding, and they're, like, getting drunk and yell at each other every night, and I'm sleeping on a bloat mattress in the living room, and it's just like...
Yeah.
But I got a place, went home, moved in with a woman in Studio City, and then lockdown, and it was
it's such a weird thing.
Yeah, it was. Well, because my only experience of Los Angeles is a pandemic. Like,
right.
I literally had a month
of open Los Angeles before. It was like, and it got weird too. Like when they started shutting, like we're shutting down all the beaches and stuff. I'm like, that's the only place anyone can go.
Right.
And I wanted to go because they had that whole the blue phosphorescent with the red algae, you know. That was like in March or April, but then the beaches were closed. And it's like, fuck, I really wanted to. And I wish I just would went and did it. Like, what were they weren't like arresting people, but everyone was just terrified.
Yeah,
you know, at that point to go anywhere. So it was like, I mean, it was hard. I mean, it got like I got into some fucking dark places, you know, because I didn't really know anyone, and then there's this lockdown.
Right.
You know, I don't know the person I'm living with.
Yeah.
You know.
So, and when you say living with, you're sharing a house, an apartment?
I rented the bigger bedroom with a bathroom. So I kind of had that, which was fine. But I've never lived with anyone that I hadn't known before.
You weren't, friends with.
Yeah. So, you know, it was, needless to say, I got a therapist at one point. Because it's like, dude, I am like, you know, I was making jokes about how I was going to start calling like the suicide hotline because I was so desperate for help. And I'd just keep doing it till they like have to star 6-7 after a while. Because like, John, we know you're not going to kill yourself.
Come
we
on,
just
man.
Stop calling. No, I'm serious. I just got to get this thing with my dad. I need to work out. And then I'm totally,
I'm done.
And then I'm blowing my brains
out. I need
some
closure first.
So
they're like, are you lonely, man? Because it seems like you should probably just, you know, call a call girl or something.
Oh.
You're like, listen, there's dead call girls already. That's how it goes.
So it's been a very unique.
Yeah, because then there's no
experience.
Acting classes and stuff.
No,
were you
there's
doing
nothing.
Zoom.
You know, I did a podcast with a friend.
Did
he not?
Did they take you? Did you solve any crimes? He's obviously not into QAnon if he's taking pictures of 10-year-olds.
Oh God. I should, but I was like, should I say this one? Maybe leave this one, but whatever.
I think it's all right. That kid's got to be of age now.
Yeah,
so.
He'll probably like sue me like the Nirvana baby.
Yeah, that's exactly
like,
right.
I remember that. I turned around, I saw some guy taking a picture wearing a Waylon Jennings hat and looked oddly happy, like he had just
the hundreds of
Lonnie
children
Anderson.
That probably have a memory where like that's probably the guy. Not realizing everyone. Everyone after a good Lonnie Anderson sighting has that embarrassing kid in the bathroom
moment. Like the post
moment.
Thing that happens,
But.
Well, how long have you been out here?
I've been out here almost 19 years, something like that.
Did you come straight from Kansas?
Yeah. I basically waited until I was 21, and then once I could get into the comedy clubs, I moved out here.
Well, you had purpose, and you kind of knew what you were doing.
I started doing comedy there, and, it was kind of pointless. I did
the comedy club in Kansas City, and then I did a couple of like the random clubs around in that region. Mm-hmm. I went to Tulsa once. I went to Wichita, St. Louis. Did like free 5-10 minutes.
Sure, yeah, anywhere you can get up on there. Well, yeah. I'm curious, like, what your experience was doing stand up in Kansas versus doing it in L.A. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was weird. It was doing open mic there is strange because there was always lots of people there. Like the open mics had like 100 people at the show,
mm-hmm.
and it'd be me and like 15 other open micers. We each did like 3 to 5 minutes, but a lot of the people all brought friends and like they brought a crowd. So like I never had anyone, like my girlfriend at the time would come and watch me sometimes, uh-huh. but otherwise I'm not telling people because I was, you know, well,
yeah,
starting comedy.
Like just kinda...
But there's a lot of people who would pack it out. So I just started, I did it for like a year and a half in Kansas City where I just thought there's a lot of, when you do open mics, there's going to be a crowd.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I moved out here and the first open mic I did, there was 2 people in the crowd. Well, and then a bunch of other open micers.
I was just curious, like, what your experience was like, you know, because the open mics that I would do, like, in Minneapolis or Portland or Oakland were, you know, it's this small pond, whatever kind of scenario. Yeah. And I had a lot of things instances where it's like, it just kind of, like, the culture was kind of really, really high school and, like, you know... If you've been here if you've been doing it for a long period of time, you're just funny. And there'd be this forced laughter. And it was just, and it was really.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how it is, I think, in every non-major market.
Yeah, so now I'm just curious.
It just basically becomes like they had the same, like 3 guys basically tried to get all the stage time at all the places to go up.
Yeah.
Like they had their little clique or whatever it was. And
yeah,
If you weren't a part of that, then
oh, yeah, then
they
almost
the
like hated you. Yeah. I would get up and do open mics and I could see them like in the front row with just disdain.
Yeah.
And their arms crossed. And, you know, it's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, this, you know how hard this is? Why are you being such a jerk? You know, yeah. like.
But they don't want the competition because there's such limited availability to do comedy, I think, places like that. And I would have a lot of guys like give me terrible advice about, like when I started telling people that I was going to move to LA, and they were like, "No, you shouldn't do it." And I'm like, "Why?" And they're like, "Well, you gotta be a known headliner. You know,
yeah,
you gotta have
weird,
a solid
like,
hour before you.
You're
move
not ready or whatever."
Yeah, I'm like, "You guys have literally been here for like 18 years. You told me you started doing comedy in the mid '80s. This is like early 2000." I'm like.
Yeah.
You don't have a solid hour. You just bomb regularly every week at this open mic.
You have your shaky 10 minutes.
Yeah. And you run a show at the Fazoli's patio or something
Well, did you think when you got to LA that did you find that the scene here was a little bit more open, a little bit more, you know.
There's just more of a scene. So, like, I started just doing all the open mics I could. And back then, the early 2000s, there was, like, I can't remember what the website was, but it basically had a list of all the open mics.
Chuckle Monkey.
Oh, yeah, it was. That is what it was, Chuckle Monkey. And so, I would look it up, and, you know, there's 3 open mics. If you wanted to hit them up, it'd be, like, on Tuesdays, it was Laugh Factory, and then there was a pizza place in Northridge. And so I would just hit them all up and meet some people, and most of them were pointless. And it was just, like, that wasn't worth it at all to drive an hour and 15 minutes to go bomb for 3 minutes at a pizza place. But
yeah, it's a commitment.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've gone back and forth, but I have too much respect for the art form to do it half-assed, so it's like, well, I don't want, you know. But I thought about just doing it again here for the fuck of it, especially because I don't know anybody, and I thought, well, if I just go do stand-up again, I'll at least meet funny people, and if something comes out of that, that's great, because it's like, I don't know, what do you have to lose?
But, right.
And I do have a couple friends that do it now, and they did say post lockdown that it seemed like people were a lot more like, hey, you're out, you're doing stuff, like, and
friendly,
just kind of a
yeah.
friendly, kind of cool, kind of more, you know, helpful, supportive vibe, which that's not how it should be, but
It definitely is. I mean, people are definitely a lot friendlier in the post-lockdown world with each other.
Yeah.
There's a lot of competition, I think, beforehand, where now it's just kind of... And, the popularity of podcasts, too, I think make it so a lot more people have reach to, perform more places or whatever it is. But, yeah, I don't... It was... I found Los Angeles to be... open in terms of when I moved out here, just having places to perform.
Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Looks like you're up.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be right back. We'll be right back, and when we come back, we'll have Sarah, and we'll ask some more questions. If that's cool.
Cool.
All right. Say hi. Hi guys, we're back.
That was very announcery.
Hey guys, we're back.
I always try and go morning radio.
I was gonna say yes.
Okay, you're watching Rick in the Morning here at WBuzz 43.
This episode is brought to you by your mom's butt. Your mom's butt, a big fat butt that farts.
Dang.
Right there.
You've done sponsor promos before, I can tell.
That was in the chamber.
We're back. Sarah is here. She's with me.
I'm with you.
We are. We're about ready to delve deeper into the world of John Walker
you
Jones.
You always say, because I'm a moron and I don't know what to ask.
Yeah.
And it's no, this is just me inserting myself into your show.
I'll take it. We need the structure, Sarah.
I'm just, really fascinated, A, with the name, first of all. Can you tell us what your original name was? Or you don't have to. You can be...
You mind my legal name?
Yeah, your legal name. Oof. You don't have to. You don't have to. I want to know why, what made you decide? And I was thinking that maybe your legal name was Mike Smith.
No, it's still John. But, it's funny because this comes back to my divorce.
Oh.
So when I got divorced.
You don't want to have to pay alimony. There's no kids.
There's no owning anything. It was just in and out. So
she took your name.
Fake was death.
Yeah. Well, she kept it for a bit, and I'm like, "Why are you keeping my name? And why am I keeping it? I have no. I don't
no
talk
connection.
To my dad. I don't need it. And at that time, I was listening to a lot of George Jones and Waylon Jennings. So I came up with originally maybe I'll change my name to John Waylon Jones, which is so country. But and I looked at the cost or whatever. I'm like, fuck it. I'm not gonna do that. So I didn't.
Right.
And then years later, when I was in Oakland and started getting into acting classes and stuff, and I was like, well, if I'm gonna do this, then maybe I don't want to use my real last name. I'm going to find something else. And I remembered John Waylon Jones. And I'm like, God, that's almost too country. And so I just was started Googling. Western tombstones, and then I saw the John Walker Jones, and I'm like, oh, I think that one's even better. And and of course we talked about the whole experience at the bar. But another thing, my friend Everett is also a graphic designer, and I was like, I think John Walker Jones would look kind of cool on a T-shirt, just block letter John Walker Jones, the gray ash, old school.
Yeah.
50-50 gym shirts or whatever. And he's like, I think that's a pretty good idea. And a week later, he sends me a text and he's like, John Walker Jones, come to the bar. I'm like, all right, cool, dude. And I go in there and he's wearing a John Walker Jones shirt behind the bar. And he printed me one up and some other people. And
solid advertising.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a Sunday night, and Sunday nights they did a blues jam. And since I played drums and stuff, I would just come and play drums and hang out. And I'm there that one night, and the other musicians are there, and God, he's got his own T-shirt now.
Yeah.
It's just like
he's way up in the merch game. Everyone knows merch is step one.
If I've done anything, it'll be merching and advertising.
It's like a bartender with a business card. You're like, this guy's really serious.
Yeah, he's taking this way too seriously. Yeah. I had a buddy who was wanted to get into making sketches. And this was probably 15 years ago. When
sketch
there was,
comedy?
Yeah,
or
sketch
like
comedy.
Courtroom
for,
sketches.
Or,
both, probably.
I mean, that's a cool thing to get into.
Hey, might be your next gig.
Maybe, yeah.
He goes, I go, so what's the deal? Did you write some sketches that you want us to film? And he was like, we're not there yet. And I go, what does that mean? And he's like, we got to start with merch. And I'm like,
starting.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to buy merch for something that doesn't exist yet.
I mean, I appreciate the confidence, you know.
Now it's like every time I see comedians selling their merch, I'm like, that guy has like 4 minutes of open mic material and he's got merch.
Yeah.
I've never sold anything with my name on it.
Is your name always been, like, you didn't change your name?
No.
I was thinking James Ingram. I'm like, isn't there like a soul singer? But it's James.
Oh, yeah.
It's
That's my dad's name, though, James Ingram.
Are you using your real name?
My mother's name is James Ingram.
That makes sense. I knew there was a connection here somewhere.
No, my full name is Sarah Tiana Haynes.
Ooh.
And Tiana. So when I moved out here, like Sarah Haynes was like a reporter who's now actually, she's on Good Morning America, but like that was like a name. So I was like, oh, I'll go by my whole name because my dad gave me the name Tiana and he thinks it's Native American. Sorry, Dad, if you're listening. Because Tiana was a Native American woman that was married to Sam Houston and she was like a medicine woman or something. So like he thinks that we're part Cherokee, which, you know, most white people in America probably have some sort of Cherokee in them. Not by way of...
It was consensual.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
It
wasn't like co-opted. It was like a...
I was like, I'll go by my whole name, Sarah Tiana Haynes. Like Sarah Jessica Parker, Sarah Michelle Gellar. They were all very popular at the time.
The three names is solid.
Sure, yeah. Daniel Day-Lewis.
You're either a great actor or a serial killer.
Yeah.
And I was like, most women aren't serial killers, so I won't have that stigma. And then when I started doing stand-up, MCs would come up to me and they'd be like, how do you say your middle name? And I'd be like, it's Tiana, like a tiara, but with an N, Tiana. And so when they'd announce me, they'd be like, please welcome Sarah Tiana. And then they would forget my last name because they were focused so hard on trying to pronounce my middle name right. And then I was like, oh, well, I'm probably not going to have my last name forever anyway, God willing, knock on wood. I still have it.
Yep.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah, Chris, we're on to you, buddy.
But
I don't know Chris, but he sounds
that's
like
her boy.
Terrible person.
Yeah.
The father of my child. We've been together a long time. We're not married because he's a Patriots fan and he's won enough. But
nice.
Anyway.
I like that shot.
I ended up
into the shadows.
Reducing my name. And now when people meet my parents, they're like, hi, Mr. and Miss Tiana.
It's
so like now they've stopped correcting people. They're like, nice to meet you. I'm Mr. Tiana. I'm Mrs. Tiana. Like they just...
They've accepted the role.
Yeah, they've accepted it. Because it's too hard to explain.
Yeah.
When I started open mic in Los Angeles, I went by Dick Ingram.
No, you didn't.
I did. I swear to God.
That's very close to like Big Dick Energy.
Yeah.
But I shortened it to Dick Ingram.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, so many old people are still named Dick.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was my grandpa, the one I'm named after. He was Dick O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was funny, and my persona has always been I'm kind of a dick, so I'm like, this makes sense. And so I did open mics as Dick Ingram for a year, and then when I started working here, Eleanor was like, hey, so you want to work here? The guys recommended you. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, what's your name? I'm like, Dick Ingram. She's like, is that really your name, or is that like a joke? I'm like, it's my name. She's like, what does your family call you? I'm like, Rick. She's like, I'm not calling you Dick. And then I just dropped it, and I never got back to it.
Unless you're behaving like one.
Yeah.
If we change this to Dick Ingram Talks to Strangers.
It's going
to
get...
Dick Talks to Strangers is a great...
Yeah.
That's pretty good, too.
That could really...
We could get a whole new community.
Take us to the moon.
Or get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Because people might think it's Dick Talks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To Strangers.
Or listen, if we can get a video, maybe some animation, get the penis talking... Just instead of me, Argus Hamilton told me when I got passed here and I started performing as a paid regular, he was like, what's your full name?
Of course.
And I go, Richard Allen Ingram. Well, there it is. That's the name. You go by Richard Allen Ingram from now on. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. It seems kind of formal. And he was like, trust me, you're going to want to change it. And I didn't listen to him. And I feel like I probably would have minimal success, at least, if I had gone with either Dick Ingram or Richard Allen Ingram.
I'm not, you know, I'm a big Argus fan.
Yeah.
I always bring up Argus because I'm usually opening the room mm-hmm. because I'm kind and I'm not really dirty.
Yep.
And
you
Argus
have a captivating smile.
I have that's a right. captivating smile.
And an exciting and aura around you.
Yeah. Argus likes to kiss me on the mouth. So that's the reason.
That's fun. Lucky you.
After he's told me about his numerous girlfriends in the back.
Yep.
But I always feel like when Argus does offer me a bit of advice, it's usually very good advice.
Yeah.
Because he's been here since 1976.
Yeah, his advice to me was change my name to my full real name. And then other than that, his only advice was like, stop making fun of me all the time.
Yeah.
Well, I was just like, not listening to that either.
Because I will murder you.
Yeah. Trust me. If I'm Richard Allen Ingram, you're dying tonight.
So... John Walker Jones,
yes.
Do you and your ex-wife still speak?
No.
No.
You both gave up the name eventually. And...
Did she keep your name?
No, she got remarried. I mean, we've talked. Oh, okay. It's just one of those things where it's best to not, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes.
There's no reason to.
Yeah, and I feel like you can kind of go back to just being that person that you were at that point when you're not that person anymore.
Yeah.
Like, there's no bad blood. I don't wish her any ill will or anything like that.
Well, I do, because who goes to Vegas to sightsee?
What?
Because yeah.
You go there to be a heathen. I mean, that's why it's there.
Listen, I'm not going there to just, like, party. I don't go to clubs, but I am a degenerate gambler. Like, I love slot machines. I'm going there this weekend. This episode will be airing after I've already gone, so sorry you didn't get to see me and Tosh at the Mirage. But,
nice.
You know... I live for slot machines. I actually play them on an app on my phone.
You're that into it.
I'm that into it.
Wow.
It's just like, so I'm like, when people say, oh, we went to Las Vegas and we went to Red Rocks.
I've done it.
What? Yeah. You have?
Yeah.
I
legitimately hate everything about Vegas.
I do too. The last time I went back, I'm like, I'm never coming back here again. It's just
went a couple times when I partied and I thought it was fine. But even after like two nights, I'm just like, we got to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it's then, just there's like just a gross energy to it, and there's all those people that were like slapping their hands with the cards
see,
for the sex workers and
I completely disagree. I think it has the best restaurants in the world, all within walking distance.
See, I'm diabetic, so I can't enjoy
God.
Most of
it. I like all the neon. I like all the lights. That's very exciting to me. But that's kind of it now.
Yeah.
And like if you go downtown, the old part where they have like the crazy you know, all the animation and stuff, and like I think Vegas, or like almost every city in America anymore would have been so cool in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
But they're just all not.
It's all commercialized
anymore.
Noxious now.
Well, when you enjoy gambling and you have money, like,
that's my problem,
but
I think.
First of all, I love 24-hour room service, which is very hard to get in
a lot of
places on the road. And they, like, I think the people watching, because I don't really go out and walk around. Like, I'll go... There's like three hotels that I will normally stay at because that's where I get free rooms. So it's like one of these three.
Yeah.
And then we started bringing my baby there because.
To Vegas?
Yes.
And putting it on the table?
No, because let me tell you.
Put it on black.
How much for a baby?
It's like.
When I've been going to Vegas for like, you know, the last 10, 15 years, like in a fun, like gambling kind of way. And
not a problem, not a problem
up.
Way, but a fun.
No,
fun
I definitely
game.
Have. I definitely have a problem, but like Cage doesn't need to go to college. Like,
no.
Let's think about like he's not going to be smart enough to get in college unless he gets a scholarship to play sports.
Smart.
And, like, that's what we're counting on.
Yeah, focus.
But when I've gone to Vegas, I've never looked up, and there is so much to see if you look up. Like, the chandeliers are crazy. There's flowers.
Yeah.
There's mirrors. There's all kinds of decorations. And when you're a little babe, like, he thinks it's the craziest, coolest place.
There is a
there's
lot.
Oh, yeah.
Water
it's like
shows.
Christmas Town or something.
Yeah. So, like.
Lights everywhere.
Yeah. And we were always, like, incredibly. And he likes swimming. And there's, like, big pools. And, like,
yeah, I can't handle it. I feel like I've told this story on every podcast I've ever been on.
Probably this one twice.
But the amount of Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch that plays is just too much for me to be able to handle. I stayed at the Harrah's one time, and it just about every 2 or 3 hours, it came back
really?
On loop. And I just sat in my room for the first day, just like, I'm going to lose my mind, and I'm going to have to murder people. And
then I was understandable. Like, that's a song that will make me feel murderous rage as well.
Yeah. I just go, you know what? I could probably just go ask them to give me a different room.
Yeah.
And then I did, and they were like, yeah, whatever. It's fine.
It's just playing in every single room. Like, oh, God.
Whenever you tell that story, because the Wahlburgers is actually attached to the Harrah's on that new outside front.
Okay.
So that's
why if it's in that place.
I thought, no, it's definitely by the carousel. So to the right of the carousel, there's a lot of little restaurants, and then there's a couple of big ones on the second level.
Right.
And there's definitely a Wahlburgers there. So I thought, whenever you were talking about that, I'm like, I wonder when they built that Wahlburgers.
They probably knew.
That's why.
Well, they said this is the Marky Mark section of Vegas because they play it so often.
The other thing that sucks about it now, too, is that like all the streets are like cut off. They have like the mm-hmm. fence and whatever because I guess lots of people were just getting ran over.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to like go up and around these stairs and into these insanely expensive malls and then further down to just actually cross the street.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just.
Yeah. So you're not into it. That's okay. But I was just, my whole point was that like, good riddance to your wife if she was going to Vegas to sightsee. That was my whole point.
She wanted to get that nature experience. What we're saying is you're cool and
she is
the enemy, bro.
We don't need to talk about my terrible behavior. It's like, no, it's probably on her and her bad sightseeing.
Yeah.
So when you were married to her, where were you living?
Minneapolis.
Oh, okay. So this was a long time ago.
This is a long time ago, yeah.
So you went Minneapolis, Portland, Oakland,
LA, yeah.
Okay. And so what... You said from Portland to Oakland, it was a job
mm-hmm.
that brought you. And then what made you decide to leave Oakland?
I was doing some stand-up. The funny thing is, the last time I did stand-up, I went to a club with a friend of mine, and I was working on some bit about Prince, and it was about the song Let's Pretend We're Married from 1999. And there's a part in the song where he says, I sincerely want to fuck the taste out of your mouth.
Oh, wow.
And I remember when I heard it.
Like, it sounds like so much more crude not coming from Prince.
I know,
right? You're like, oh, my God.
Sexy coming from Prince.
Yeah, Prince
and
said,
then
you're like that,
John Walker
that tiny
Jones
little man.
It. And you're like, now no, he sounds
no,
like
that's
a
pretty, yeah, that's
now
pretty
he
terrible.
Sounds like a serial yeah. killer. This is the first time.
When I heard it young.
And, over your and, mouth. You sound like Buffalo Bill. This is.
It terrified me. Because like I wasn't quite, like I'm still a hairless little 11-year-old, but I'm hearing this song. I'm like, if that's what's expected. There's no way.
I can't
you might as well snap this little baby carrot off and throw it in the driveway because I'm not fucking the taste out of anybody's mouth. And I was wondering, it's like, well, did Prince ever like, you know, let someone know ahead of time, or was it just mm-hmm. like maybe you slept with Prince and then like he took you out for like Indian food afterwards and you know he's like, how's the tiki masala or whatever? And you're like, it's kind of bland and flavorless, you know? Like, well, it's because I fucked the taste out of your mouth. Like, right. Well, how about a heads up?
He was the original COVID-19.
I was going to say, he's like before his time.
Now we know where it started. Yeah. It started at
no
Paisley
taste.
Park.
So that's why you moved to
LA?
No,
but I was.
Because you wanted to fuck the taste out of somebody.
He said, if there's one town where I can fuck the taste out of mouths.
Or if the taste of wanting to fuck me, like immediately that'll be gone. Uh-huh. So. But no, I was just kind of, that was an idea that I was kind of going to work on. But when I was there, like every kid was like a 22-year-old white kid talking about jerking off. And it's like, oh my God. And by the time I got up on stage, like, I don't even want to do this. I don't want to do this bit. I'm just like, you know, as you know, when you do these open mics that are just kind of a nightmare. And the next morning, my girlfriend at the time sent me a text and it was the Louis C.K. thing came out.
Mm.
So I was kind of like, you know what? I'm done. I just don't.
This
like,
is a creepy culture.
It's just like if one less middle-aged white guy walks away, it's not going to be a huge bummer. Mm-hmm. So
I'm always impressed when people get out of comedy and they're just like, you know what, this wasn't it for me. I started with this guy. His name is Monty something. I started with him in Kansas City, and he moved out to L.A. And I was on the road with Dice, I think, at the time. And he sent me a text. And
oh,
said,
really?
Yeah. And he said, I'm in L.A. I was going to try and get up in the open mic at the Comedy Store. Can you help me out? So I said, sure. So I sent a text to someone. And I said, hey, I started with this guy. He wants to just do the open mic. Can you make sure he's one of the 15 people on the list or whatever it was? And they said, yeah, sure. So I came back like a week or two later, something like that. And I said, were you able to get my buddy up? And they said, yeah, he went up. I go, how was it? And they're like, I mean, there was no one here, but, you know, it wasn't great. I'm just like, well, fair enough. So I see him maybe 6 months, 8 months later, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's hanging out the front patio. I'm like, oh, hey, what's up, man? You know, I thought I would see you more. And he was like, yeah, I did open mics for like a couple months out here. And I don't think I should be a comedian. And I was like, whoa, I never heard anyone say that. And I'm like, wow, what are you doing? He's like, I'm in grad school. I think he was getting his like psychology master's degree or something.
Complete, like, 180.
Yeah. I go, oh, that's fucking great. So I talked to him for a little bit, and then I left. I'm like, I like him more now than ever before, just knowing that someone like made the realization after meeting so many delusional people out here, just like, I got it. And you're like, you haven't had it for 25 years out here. You're not going to get it now.
Yeah, or just the thought that if you move here, then automatically something's just going to happen.
Right.
Like they're waiting for you.
Yeah.
Oh, you're finally here.
We needed.
Yeah. Are you another middle-aged white guy? Oh, thank God you're here.
Yeah.
But wait, so you're doing mics in Oakland.
I did them in Oakland and Portland. And
then the Louis C.K. thing came out. And then what?
I just was like, yeah, just that I was like, ugh.
It makes you want to move to L.A.? Well, that's what I'm curious about.
I thought, okay, well, like, I know that I'm funny, and I really think that being funny is just, like, a lucky gift that you have. Like, if you can be funny and you can make yourself laugh and make other people laugh, it makes life so much easier to fucking deal with. You
yeah.
know? So
someone fucks you up in the right way how I look at it.
I don't necessarily need to, like, do this for a living. I can still just be funny in my life and just have a good time. And I thought, well, maybe I could be a comedic actor.
Mm-hmm.
And I just took a class
Oakland?
In Oakland, yeah, mm-hmm. it was in Berkeley. And and the teacher, Rolf Saxon.
Sure.
Great name.
Solid name. He liked me, and he just, after class one day, he's like, I think if you work on this, you could be pretty good. So I'm like, okay, well, then I'm going to, whatever you want me to do. Like, you know, he kind of became a mentor. Because any kind of artistic endeavor that I've tried, I never really studied it. Or just jumped into it. Like, I learned how to play guitar, so let's start a band.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to do stand-up, so I'm just going to get up there and I'm going to do it. Or whatever it was. And I thought, well, if I'm gonna try to do this acting thing, let's actually take some classes and treat it a little bit more seriously and as a craft. And so I just basically told him, like, will you tell me what to do and I'll do it. So it's like, all right, I want you to take this Meisner class, or I want you to take this voice, or whatever. And I just did like 3 years of that, and finally felt like, you know, okay, I've had a couple moments where things are starting to actually kind of feel real. I think I can do this, or at least, you know, I have confidence enough to be like, okay, let's give it a shot. And at the end of December, I decided to move.
December 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
great. Well, I will say that I think comedy takes a lot of forms. I think when you are inherently funny, like you were talking about, like all the open mics in Kansas City, like there's like these three guys that are always, and it's like the challenge with comedy is making people you don't know laugh. That's the only challenge that there is. If you can make people who don't know the story, anything about you, laugh, because a lot of times when people get really good in Atlanta, it's like people already know your story. You don't have to explain who you are. And then, but when you're fresh on a scene, you have to explain everything about yourself. It's like the pilot of a TV show. It's like there's so much backstory to set up. It's hard to get to the comedy right away.
Yeah.
You have to set up so much stuff about where you are, where it's from, you know.
Yeah. Everyone's job, everyone's relationship.
We can all make everybody at the family reunion laugh. It's like people who aren't your family, can you make them laugh? That's the test. And I think what stand-up does to people who are really funny actors and sketch people or writers, like it really like separates you and or it helps you find your niche. Like when you're really funny, like what your niche could be stand-up, it could be writing, it could be sketch, it could be writing for other comics. Like you don't know until you really start doing it. And LA is the best place to really sink your teeth in. And I was telling you this outside earlier, but Chappelle always told me that starting stand-up in LA is like learning to dribble in the NBA. Like, you're not going to learn mistakes. You're only going to be watching from the best.
Yeah, and I was saying, too, about how it's much more inspiring when you're at an open mic and everyone's killing it. And you're like, oh, shit, this is really cool. But when you have this night that is just brutal, and all you want to do is cry yourself to sleep, like, let alone get up at, like, you know, 1:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
It's totally different thing. But I kind of thought about that when I moved out here, because it's like, I'm not against doing it again just for fun, and more so just to meet people, because at least I'll meet some funny people.
Well,
you know,
Bobby Lee always told me you have to bomb 100 times before you're good. And then once you're good, you can bomb for the next 10 years and then be great.
Yeah. Well, and bombing's fun.
Well, yeah.
You get through it, and it's just like,
that's how you figure out.
This isn't that big of a deal.
That's where you figure out. Like, that when people talk about writing on stage, like Rick does, and he's like a genius at that.
Ooh,
when
you're Rick,
caught in a,
you are
in
a
trap.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that coming in, that I was going to be sitting across the table from a genius. But, you know, thank
you
God
did
I didn't know, because
I
never would have showed up. Like, there's no way. I can't sit across from a
genius from Kansas? Not likely.
Yeah. Across from a genius from Nebraska. Like,
yeah.
Well, Sarah Tiana Haynes does not drive from the Valley on a Wednesday night if she's not going to be sitting next to a genius.
That's right.
But I think that, like, what happens in those moments of fear, it's like the real you really comes out on stage.
Yeah.
When you're, and that's what open mics are for. You're in this sound chamber that's no longer has an echo of your friends or your family or people telling you that you're great. Like, now you are here amongst people who aren't even listening, who don't care. And it's like, how are you going to deal with those situations? And it prepares you for the rest of your career.
Well, bartending does a lot of that too, you know, because it's like, I have so many like lines and stuff that I say that people think was in the moment that I just gave to them, and they're so excited to hear it. And and I say a lot of really fucked up shit. And my boss would be like, I can't believe the stuff you get away with saying, but because it is, it's a performance.
Yeah,
you know, and when you're coming from a place that's obviously not malicious, and you just want to liberate everybody, and like, let's all say this weird, crazy stuff.
Fun.
People get kind of like, oh, I want to say something.
Oh, I can remember.
Or,
I waited tables for 10 years, and I can remember dudes being like, I'm going to give you a tip. And I'm like, why not give me the whole thing? And then I would walk away.
Nice.
And then, you know, maybe they give you a couple extra dollars.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying that, like, You get quick. And you get fast.
And you have to.
When you're interacting with that many people quickly, I mean, that's what stand-up is. Instead of having everyone in the restaurant paying attention to you, you're having people in, like, or at the bar, just, like, little bits and pieces paying attention to you. And you get really quick.
Yeah.
I got good at stand-up comedy because I was here so late at night.
Yeah.
And no one was in the crowd, and I'd perform for 4 or 5 people if I was lucky.
Yep.
And it was like, if I would go up there and I'm telling jokes about being from Kansas, and people think the Wizard of Oz, and the crowd, those 4 people are just looking at you like, this fucking hack pile of shit.
Yeah.
But you start talking to them, you basically have to make all your jokes have to be about the experience you're having.
Sure.
It all becomes inside jokes, which is really the only way to make a crowd of 4 people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And that just made me stronger, at least more confident in my ability to not be prepared for, like, not to know exactly what I'm going to say.
Yeah, well, there's the improvisational stuff to me is always, like, the most fun. And that was kind of part of the reason why I was kind of back and forth with the stand-up, because it's like, I don't want to say the same thing over and over, and I don't want to tell the same thing over and over. But being, like, with my job, it's like, I don't know who's going to be there that night, but it's always this improv, you know, and it makes you really sharp.
I think you should try that next time you do, like, an open mic. Try to just
do
crowd
work. Are you guys talking
me
back into stand-up?
No,
I'm
just
saying.
We're saying that Los Angeles needs comedians.
Los Angeles needs John Walker Jones on stage.
Do you want your life to be miserable? Because this is the way back in.
I mean, it's definitely tempting, and I do have a friend here that's been doing it, and I'm like, well, I'll go with you, and I'll do some stuff. I think the idea of not being obsessed with something and just kind of stretching out and doing whatever without this idea that's tied to the end of it, because that's always been my problem with art or whatever it is that you're doing. If you have this like idea, like, okay, I'm going to be a rock star, and I'm going to make this money. And blah, blah, blah. It's always this thing, this end result that's going to happen.
If I'm not touring stadiums, then I'm not successful.
And you will compromise yourself in so many ways, because the only thing you're going for is this end thing, not as opposed to just this visceral moment and enjoying this thing that you're doing, whether it's music or whether it's stand-up or whatever that it is that you're doing. But when you have, because we're as a culture, especially in America, where it's all about work and it's all about money, and your parents are like, "Well, you're not going to make money doing this." So you minimize everything to just a monetary end, and that totally ruins the reason why you started doing it to begin with, because it's not enjoyable anymore if that's all you're thinking about.
Yeah.
You're trying to be an artist of any kind, for sure. If you're just like, I don't have any goals in life, and you just want to be an accountant, then money is the thing that should drive you.
Yeah.
But if you do have a creative endeavor, then money can't be the sole purpose.
No, because let me tell you this. When you're thinking about money, you're not thinking about jokes.
Yeah. No. Well, you're not thinking about songs. You're not thinking about lyrics. You're not thinking about what you're sketching.
Not
you're not writing.
You're creating.
It's
you're thinking about consuming. And you can't...
you drift away from your truth.
Yeah.
That's like consume or create. It's very
decide.
Like, which one do you want to do? Do you want to consume, mm-hmm. or do you want to create? You know,
yeah.
So, and each time I attempt something, even if I've had failures, I'll remember that. We're like, oh yeah, when I was in that band in my 20s, I was playing music I hated. Like stuff I wouldn't even, I would cringe if I heard it now.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I had at a point where I was so compromised and so wanting this thing at
this
the end of
it. This is what
it
takes to get success.
Yeah.
So I'll do
it. Yeah. If I get signed to a label, then maybe I can do what I want to do or.
Yeah.
Those are good lessons to learn, you know, especially if you're doing something, because it's hard to make a living being a creative, you know?
You definitely need to find the middle ground. I feel like I've compromised very little in terms of artistic integrity, and I have very little monetary reward for.
But you probably feel good about yourself. Or maybe momentarily.
No, I think the only thing that you ever need and want in comedy is respect amongst your peers. It doesn't matter how much money you have. If you can't walk into a comedy club and everyone is genuinely happy that you're there and excited to watch you, you are a failure.
Yeah.
And Rick has that. So no matter how big of a house he has or what kind of car he drives, like the fact that when he shows up at the Comedy Store.
What are you driving, Rick?
I've got a Camry. I'm not going to lie.
You are lying. But no, you're not.
I've got an Acura.
He's not
lying.
I'm
like, ooh.
Technically, I'm in a Corolla tonight. But
this is a very small business. There's a very small family.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to have respect amongst your family, and that's what Rick has, and that's why we're here. That's why I'm sitting next to him, because
and
I have respect for him.
That's
too.
Why I'm sitting across from
yep.
him.
Yeah, he just found out who you are, and he's very excited.
I'll take it.
I'm very...
A lot of
respect.
Any three names that want to like me, that's the demographic I'm looking for.
Okay. This is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, this is great. Thank you so much for having me.
Do you have social media or anything you want to promote?
No.
A bartending gig? You want people to come tip?
I bartended a place called Mr. O's.
Oh.
In Studio City on Ventura. It's actually like a really cool.
It is a good place.
Cool spot. Like,
yeah.
The guy that runs it is amazing.
Sarah goes
They're
there.
They're all really nice.
Why
oh,
he's
okay.
here?
I see.
Sarah
and
Aswell.
That's a really good place.
We call her Aswell because she's.
She's.
Sarah.
The second
I was
Sarah.
I was upset Aswell. That she wasn't going to be able, but she's doing such a. Like a good deed tonight. She's taking care of these
She's
dogs.
She's taking care of dogs.
My God. We have good people working on this?
I know. She's going
like
to get fired immediately. For
yeah.
Being a
we
good
can
person.
Find a garbage person who's not helping people to be on the podcast. All right.
But if you ever see John Walker Jones coming to a city near you.
Yeah.
Or
just walking down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just yell it out.
Just yell it
I'll
out.
I'll be happy to hear it.
Say.
Just yell it, no matter where you are.
Or just yell at me.
You murdered my ears.
That's the way to do it.
But yeah. Think the,
you
and
shit
think,
in the Grand Canyon.
Oh,
well, no.
And I want to thank you guys, because this has been lovely, you know, and I appreciate the opportunity to come down and shoot a shit with you guys.
Here's where he starts crying.
I'm getting emotional.
I'm going to cry on the way home.
It's cool. I there's enough interesting people in the world, and not every podcast has to just be comedians talking to other comedians about comedians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what you're doing is actually pretty cool, because it is a very unique idea, because, you know, people want to hear from, what's this famous person doing? Or whatever. But just talk as, you know,
we
a
want
conversational
the least famous
thing.
Person.
Yeah.
I'm just
well,
kidding.
You got it tonight.
I want someone who
I mean,
was
I do have
regionally
a with my name on yeah. it.
Someone who's regionally known in at least three quasi-big American cities.
Yeah.
I want a guy that's left his underwear in Red Rocks.
Listen, any man who's left his underwear somewhere, I'm into talking to. Because no one's just leaving their underwear for no reason. There's a story behind every abandoned pair of men's underwear.
Anyone
that's,
a guy that's gotten
fed
divorced.
Starving coyotes and the canyons.
He went full George Brett and just shit his pants.
I was wondering if you were going to bring up George Brett. Like, maybe.
You remember George Brett? Baseball player for the Kansas City Royals in the 80s and 90s?
No.
He was like the Royals star.
Mm. And he shit his pants?
And he
famously.
Famously.
So he was basically like an assistant coach during spring training one year for the Royals.
Okay.
And he did an interview for like some local news station or whatever it was. And they left his mic on while they were just getting shots of him like stretching and stuff so they could use it as like filler for their news story.
Yeah.
And at one point, he just walks up to a group of young players stretching, and he's like, shit my pants last night. And he's like by far the most famous Kansas City Royal ever. And so like you just see all these young guys like looking uncomfortably like, and he goes
like
on.
Like he had to get it out. Yeah, like yeah. I gotta share this with somebody.
He's
like,
he got a lot out.
You ever shit your pants? And the other guys are just like, eh. He's like, I'm good for two a year. And then he proceeds.
Wow.
He proceeds to tell a story about how he was in Vegas.
He's watching his diet or something.
Yeah.
Like,
he tells a story. He's like, we're at this great little restaurant. And then proceeds to tell a story about how he got these crab legs that then caused him to shit his pants in the lobby of the casino.
Vegas, another Vegas.
Another Vegas, pants shitting story. So he just goes into detail about it, and literally all these guys are just looking around like, how the fuck do I get away from this guy?
Yeah, like, I don't want to hear about this.
And it ends up, best double-tapered shit I ever took. Who we got pitching on Thursday? He's like, he just goes straight back into baseball talk, and everyone's like... That's every shit my pants story just reminds me of Kansas City legend George.
Well,
Brett.
And definitely seafood is a can all
yeah.
That's always that's a dicey.
Always playing the odds in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
You gamble a different way, even if you're not losing money.
Yeah, crab legs in Vegas, you might shit your pants.
Well, this weekend when I'm in Vegas, I'll put my money on brown instead of black or red.
Nice,
there you go.
Well played.
And play some Baccarat or whatever.
Thanks for listening, guys. Rate us all the stars. A million. If they let you do a million stars,
do
rate
six.
Us a million.
Six stars at least.
We got live
that's
show.
A big, that's a big divide.
Yeah.
Let's do six. Well, how about a million? Like,
tell them to do a million. If they do six, that's fine. But live show here at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room, December 8th. We're going to have people in the crowd. We'll pick people from the crowd to interview, and it'll be a good time. So come out, have fun, bring your friends. People we can make fun of. We're always happy to mock anything that can be mocked. So
yeah, and if you'd also like to be a guest on the actual
the regular podcast.
Just DM Ingram Pod on Twitter or Instagram, or you can DM myself, Sarah Tiana, on Instagram.
Yeah, me too. If you want, I'll send it over.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. It'll take me a few days to see it, probably, because I'm a square from the 1900s. But yeah.
Okay. Cool. Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM Ingram Pod on Twitter. That's Ingraham Pod on Twitter.
Goodbye to everyday people.
Special thanks to the Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.